Hi, this is Melissa Dowling, editor of Cheers, inviting you to join us at the 2023 Cheers Beverage Summit, September 17th through 19th in sunny Orlando, Florida. This hosted buyers event offers a rare opportunity to engage directly with a curated list of vendors and fellow executive buyers in one place. Attendees will enjoy complimentary registration, hotel accommodations, and flight reimbursement, in addition to a two-day agenda of events and activations. The only catch is we have a limited number of spots available, so you have to apply today to secure your registration. Visit CheersBeverageSummit.com to learn more. We hope to see you in September. Cheers!
Hi, and welcome to On and Off, our podcast covering the on-premise and off-premise beverage alcohol industry. I'm Kyle Swartz, editor of Beverage Dynamics and Stateways magazines. My usual co-host, Melissa Dowling, is off today, so I'll be handling this one solo. I'm joined today by three leaders from the National Alcohol Beverage Control Association, or NABCA, which is the nationwide organization that represents the interests of beverage alcohol control states. Here to talk about the kind of data and important industry statistics collected by NABCA, my guests today are Neil Inslee, President and CEO of NABCA, David Jackson, Senior VP Trade Relations, COO of NABCA, and Sean Noble, General Sales Manager, Control Region, Campari America. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us.
Absolutely.
Kyle, we certainly appreciate the opportunity to talk a bit about NABCA data. It is kind of the internal engine that drives us. You know, I'll set things up if everybody's okay with maybe a little brief history of NABCA and the data. And
absolutely.
Then we'll have a discussion, hopefully, you know, in a little more detail. But just to start with, for some of the listeners who may not be aware of NABCA or the control systems, the control markets make up about 25% of the national population and about 23% of the distilled spirit sales in the United States, which is one of the largest markets in the world. So there is, you know, a bit of a presence among the control systems in the United States as far as alcohol sales go. We are the trade association that represents those control systems. And I get asked frequently, particularly in my prior life as an attorney, you know, what is the legal definition of a control system? And technically, there is not one in federal law or you know, in state law. But you know, we generally define it as at some point in the supply chain, the state-owned enterprise or the government takes ownership of the product. For the control systems, that's usually every control system. It's at the wholesale level. And in some, it's also at the retail level. And, you know, even though they're all referred to as control systems, there are no two that are exactly alike, which is by design under the 21st Amendment that, you know, the states could decide how they want to distribute alcohol within their jurisdictions. So NABCA's mission is to support our control systems in their missions. Ideally, what we, you know, what we are after and what the control systems are after is kind of being that pivot or balance point between commerce and public safety. The ideal system and what our goal and mission is to make sure that that stays level, one does not outweigh the other. And that helps to promote safe and orderly markets, helps to provide a good source of revenue in these control jurisdictions and keeps the playing field level. And, you know, part of that success, if you will, is directly attributed to NABCA data. Our industry partners and people and other, you know, interest groups can, you know, really do a deep dive and see exactly how their product or other products or categories are doing within the control systems that can be reflective of the broader audience at large. So, you know, it's, and you'll hear later, you know, how granular the data can be and how valuable it can be to many different stakeholders. But we have a long and storied history. The organization was actually founded in the 30s after Prohibition. And it was kind of initially founded on the premise of situation that had come up on as it relates to pricing. And that kind of started the conversation in conglomerate and really started NAPCA in this process of collecting data, although they weren't doing it how we do it today, and certainly not at the level. But, you know, to say that we've, you know, been in the data business since the late 30s is pretty unique, I think, in the market. And, you know, some have said we were big data before there was big data. So we've been at it quite some time. It certainly has, I think, helped to strengthen our market and strengthen, as I said, some of our industry partners and other stakeholders in really getting a good look at the alcohol trends and things that happen. Our customers, our customer base, our purchasers of our data go far beyond even suppliers and manufacturers. We're at a point now where, you know, we have a lot of large private equity firms and people, financial institutions purchase our data to, you know, have a vetted, granular look at how certain categories and things are doing within the market. And look at market trends and develop all of that forecasting that they want to do. So it's amazing to see how it's grown. And I can tell you, and we'll talk a little bit more about it, but, you know, we're not resting on our laurels at this point either. We have a massive undertaking here at NAPCA now to really look at our data, to have some customer engagement and, you know, see what's next and where we can go and how we can develop. We've seen a lot of people enter the data market and enter it specifically in the alcohol data market over the course of the last decade. So, you know, certainly there is interest there and it is of value. And we want to make sure that we can meet those folks in the marketplace and we are getting them what they want with a vetted name like NAPCA and the NAPCA brand.
Thank you, Neil. And, you know, that kind of sounds like you're teeing it up here for David to talk a little bit about what's going on with him over on the technology side to make your data attractive to businesses and beverage alcohol. So David, if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. I think Neil started off with, you know, the, a little bit of history of NAPCA. But really back in the 90s, we started collecting the information. We currently collect the data from 18 jurisdictions. The only one that's ever changed in the history of NAPCA was Washington back in 2012. But the rest have remained control states right from prohibition. Back in the 90s, when we collected the data, it was just about the product. You know, how much of it, each individual product sold and what the value was of that product in the state. And over the years, that's transformed into, you can look at out of the 18 jurisdictions, we have channel information for 16 of the jurisdictions. And you can look at any individual product in any account and now on any day. So we have daily data that is generally between 1 and 2 days old for all 18 jurisdictions. And, it, you know, it's a challenging collect. We do it, you know, there are 171 liquor boards in North Carolina, and we collect it individually from all 171. There are 210 resellers of product in Maine. So they, the retail stores that sell to the on-premise, and we collect that data from all 210. So we have a very comprehensive set of data. So every bottle, every account, every state, every day.
Are there any newer technologies you're using right now in terms of how you're collecting this data?
Yeah, there is. And yeah, we collect it in a myriad of ways. We just mentioned the 171 liquor boards in North Carolina. Well, we get it in just about every fashion you can think of, from email to you know, SFTP transfer. And the technology's changed for us. We use our main system is called Diver or Spectre Diver, which is from Dimensional Insight. We also have a new mobile platform called Gateway, which gives you access to daily data, you know, at the touch of a screen. Very simple, easy way to work. But you also look at market share. And I think, you know, when Sean gets into it, it's a lot of the big companies, their big focus is on gaining share. And this is a simple way to do it. You can look at your share, not just what your share is in spirits or what it is in a state, but right, what is your share within an individual account? And then how can you make an adjustment to either gain share or correct a decline? And that's really the value of the information. It's so granular that it, you know, a salesman can go into one individual store or restaurant and see where he was as of last month.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sean, that sounded like a question for you there. Do you mind telling us a little bit about how you at Campari use the NABCA data? What kind of insights are you getting from it, and how has it benefited what you do for Campari?
Well, I mean, the value of the data is unbelievable, as Neil was talking about. I'll talk a little bit about the Gateway app, which is amazing because the data is important as a sales guy that I'm in charge of sales and making my budget for the year. I look at data every day, but I think it's important to understand the power of the NABCA data because there's other data sources that looks at like a sampling and they come up with an aggregate on what they think the market is, you know, doing with the brands. But when it comes to the NABCA data, it is the actual consumer pull data. So the power of that data, obviously, as a salesperson, helps me, you know, make sure I'm going to hit my numbers. But I can also pull it over and get some incredible consumer data that I can give back to marketing. They can come up with programs to help develop our brands to be a little bit more successful. But more importantly, they can monitor the success of how the brand is doing from a certain marketing campaign because we have this data. But it's also important, Neil, I think you brought it up with investors. People are looking at the health of our brands as investors on how well we are doing in the control market because it's a good indicator because of the power of the data as a consumer poll. That equates to how well we're doing as a company. So there's so many eyeballs on this great source of data that helps us drive informed business decisions and consumer insights. But there also it's inventory management with COVID and supply chain disruption. If I didn't have this data during the years of COVID, I can imagine how my business would have gone down in a negative way, just having this powerful data so we can make a good supply chain information. But Neil and David, you brought up the Gateway app, which is, we talked about the power of the data, but it's really nice to see NABCA giving us uses in different formats now, because as we're running on the go, I have my apps up, I have my tablets up, I have my phones up. And I can get to this data with the Gateway app right on my phone, which has been really, really nice. And you mentioned it, David, with the market share. That's how I measure my business all day long, and I can look at it on my phone. But really like seeing. We all know that the data is super powerful and the value is amazing. But I really, really enjoy the new formats that we can get it in different, you know, phone, iPad applications.
Yeah, thanks. You know, and the thing that really sets companies apart that, you know, invest in the data and look at the technology that is behind it, it gives them a really serious advantage. So somebody like Sean can get his return on investment at a much more granular level to see whether something's working in a marketplace. So people may think that, you know, somewhere like Michigan, where there are 10,000 on-premise accounts, and they think, well, there's a target group of 10,000 accounts. Well, it's not really. If you're selling a $70 bourbon, you're going to find that roughly 9,000 of those 10,000 accounts don't sell bourbon at $70 a bottle. They're doing either very cheap vodka or a gin or so on. But out of that 1,000, they're the ones that are doing 95% of the business. And how do you best target it? Well, you spend against it, and that's what somebody like Campari and Sean can manage, and then they get a much better return than spreading it over a much greater area. I think the analogy I like to use, it's the difference between going out in the middle of the ocean and throwing a line out and hoping to fish versus standing in a trout and throwing your line into something that you know is stocked with trout. You know, your chance of success is much greater.
Great with that, David, because we can not only target and I can have a sales tactics and I know exactly where the fish are going to be at and I can start fishing. I can take that data back to my marketing department and we actually custom create programs just for these target lists. Yeah, great point.
Yeah, and we're talking about fishing. Neil's getting excited. I can see him squirming in his chair.
I was going to say, he's sitting there poking away.
In my mind, I've got the boat loaded and, you know.
It really is incredible, the benefits of real-time data on what you can learn and what it can be at your fingertips, as you were saying, on the phone. I'm just wondering if you gentlemen, this is a question for all three of you, had anything you wanted to share about what you're seeing the data saying at a current moment?
Well, in the last couple of months, things have started to decline a little bit. Mm-hmm. But remember, we've gone through, I think, nearly 2 years of staggering growth coming about from COVID. So, you know, most of our states had significant increases. Obviously, the on-premise did not, But, you know, as we got towards the end of COVID or the, you know, the main restrictions, of course, the on-premise took off at such a rate that any decline in the off-premise was more than made up for. We saw significant increase in the value of products. So, which led to, I think Sean mentioned, you know, looking at inventory management. And it's pretty hard managing inventory with tequila super premium or ultra premium growing at 80%. Now, you can see that now, Dave. You can see what the accounts are. Still very hard to manage inventory because if you went back 7 years, which is what it takes for a tequila to be ready, and said, I think I'm going to be up 80% in 2022, I think the production people might have laughed at you a little bit.
Yeah, good point. Good point. And I tell you also, David, I know I look at, you're absolutely right about the trends, and it's been really weird with the shift of closing of on-premise and some major states to the shift to off-premise and then back. I go back 5 years. We hit a lot of high water marks. And if you look at a concept between like maybe a year or 6 months, it may look like a decline. But during our high watermark, especially on certain brands, we've been able to hit it. Maybe not grow as fast as we have, but we've had all-time highs and being able to maintain it. So flat's not bad. That's what I tell my boss. But in sales, he buy it. But, you know, it's a good shot anyways. Good try.
Yeah.
Yeah, David, you brought up a lot of the individual trend questions I was going to possibly ask you about. Certainly, I see the tequila boom. Certainly, I see the premiumization boom. I think I want to ask you about the premiumization first. You know, alcohol has really found its way in this country in recent years as an affordable luxury. And it doesn't seem, I mean, I know it's always been like that, but certainly in recent times, that's been driving so much growth is a premiumization trend. It doesn't seem like we have any end in sight for that. We still see consumers trading up.
We do. And if we look back over the years, you know, we track this all the way back to 1999. So there are a lot of trends that and brands that are no longer in existence, but it's still a good way to look at it. Mm-hmm. In control states, and I do not believe it's the same in open states, there has never been a month where the price mix was negative. And the price mix is the growth of value over the growth of volume. So even during the 2009 recession, it got real close, but it actually never went below. So the growth in value has been higher than the growth in volume every month from, you know, right through that period. And that's a good indicator of the health of the industry. And control states in general, who have done exceptionally well right through, you know, either recessions or COVID.
Yeah, it does seem like alcohol premiumization, premium products remain a recession-proof category. And alcohol in general has done very well through recessions. I also want to ask you about tequila. Obviously, we're in the middle of an enormous tequila boom. Tequila had kind of been slowly ramping up, I want to say, in a couple of years pre-COVID, and then it's spiking now. I mean, you said that number, 80% growth is just incredible numbers. Again, especially for a category that had already been growing. This isn't some overnight boom the way that it happened for, like, let's say, hard seltzer or cider or hard soda a number of years ago, and then that giant fall off afterwards. It seems like the tequila boom certainly in motion now. Do we see any end in sight to this? Are we worried about an agave shortage? Just thoughts on where we are in the tequila boom right now.
It has, as of last month, slowed back down. Premium tequila still doing exceptionally well. It's positive, but it's not at that same staggering growth that it was before. So I think things are starting to calm down. The problem with all of these products, you know, anything that's aged or takes, you know, a long time for the production, you know, agave plants, a 6-year process. Anything like that, you've got to be aware of, or, you know, you've got to try to forecast 6 years in advance. And that's a huge challenge, obviously, to get that forecast correct.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then throw in the other things that happened. Lack of glass, you know, came in, capsules that were coming out of Ukraine, all those different things that all impact, you know, the ability to have product in the market.
And you had mentioned supply chain information as well. I wanted to ask you that question. Speaking of lack of glass, supply chain issue, manufacturing issues, where are we with those? Is that starting to normalize now?
I might let Sean answer that one, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting with supply chain disruption. It's not just the boat. It's not at the port yet. There's, as David said, there's glasses, caps. We had to, you know, move production on components from a different part of the country. It's a lot of different other things that happened. I think it's normalizing, but it will never get to perfection for a very long period of time. But I think the companies that can use data and get smarter about it will have less disruption and will probably be on the better end of it. But it's starting to normalize. I know a lot of, and I talked to a lot of my counterparts, is supply chain companies and divisions and departments have gotten a lot better. But like an agave, we're going to double our production in Mexico. You know, that takes a year just to, you know, get the permits and get the production running, let alone the, as David said, the agave that takes 7 years to maturation. And then throw in bourbon, you know, I mean, good bourbon is not only the production, but then it's the aging of it. And, you know, that's 8, 10 years. So it's getting better. I think what's happened, though, is you're seeing a major shift as these departments get better and reorganize. We get a lot better at how we're doing things. And I think there's going to probably be a good thing for the environment as well. I think everybody looked at it on, you know, how can I get the lowest cost? And if we outsource it to the same country to get the lowest cost, well, that puts us in a huge liability if there's a disruption in supply chain. So how do we disperse it between the country? And if it's, you're paying a little bit more, but, you know, it's going to be, you know, guarantee the inventory, probably makes it a little bit more sense. So it's changing in a positive way.
Yeah, good.
And that's something that we have, you know, daily inventory. I think virtually all of the states are either, if you're looking at it today, you're looking at last night's ending inventory, or at worst, the day before. So you can track it down and look at the products. You can look at the sales because we've got daily data. You should never really run out if you're managing it properly. There are always going to be allocated products and things that happen and shortages, but that can be worked through. Again, just using the data to manage it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thoughts on bourbon? We brought it up and haven't really touched on it yet. Obviously, we were amidst and remain amidst a giant bourbon boom. What are your thoughts on the growth of that category and the longer term trajectory?
I can jump in. There's two categories that stay remaining very, very hot with premiumizing. As David said, that in the control region, we've always grown value faster than the volume. As far as categories goes, tequila and bourbon are still really, really, really hot. I know we as a company are taking bourbon very seriously. We have a pretty big bourbon brand, but we just made acquisitions for not only brands, but for capacity with liquid. We see that trend being premium and it's not slowing down. You know, we're making our big bets on agave and bourbon.
Yeah, I always say whenever I get asked the question about when will this bourbon boom end, I always say the bourbon boom will end when I stop getting asked what the difference between bourbon and whiskey is. And I still get asked that question once a week easily. And it just goes to show you how much more consumer knowledge is still out there. And the consumers are so passionate about these products and they so want to learn. And there's still so much left to learn for these consumers. So I agree with you. I still think there's a long road ahead for whiskey and for tequila.
Kyle, I would say, you know, one thing that certainly I've noticed from years of being both a consumer and in the business, you know, booms always create synergy, it seems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we saw it with Irish whiskey and then the whiskey in general, and bourbon kind of came in on the coattails, had a great story, a little mystery around it. Certainly tequila, I think, has benefited from that bourbon experience where consumers are now, you know, they started looking at other brands that had good stories, that was kind of an artisanal, you know, feel to its production and what goes into creating a good product. And, you know, it's kind of followed in along that. And that's one thing that, you know, again, the data certainly is important there once you start to see these trends and, you know, who's going to be next or where is the next synergy going to be created in what category. But it is fascinating to me to have watched, you know, kind of that, for lack of a better, you know, analogy, that rising tide floats all boats kind of thing. But it always seems to be whenever you have an emergence or a new category, there's some synergy there with another category or product or something that follows in with it.
Very well. You know, very good.
Sean and I have been around for a while, but, you know, if you think back 15 years, could you have ever imagined people lining outside a store down the street and around a corner waiting to buy bourbon?
Right.
That's what we're at now.
I've seen fights almost break out in these lines, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Ohio, I've seen it lap all the way around the building, and special releases selling out in a minute. It's doable. I was going to say, Neil, on your tequila trend, the category being hot, it's really cool looking at the NABCA data. Is we even within the categories is what we're seeing, and you're absolutely right. As consumers are kind of being more inquisitive about what they're drinking and the quality of the liquid in there, we're seeing Reposado starting to grow three times on Blanco, and it shows you the sophistication of the palate, kind of a board and understanding what's the difference of, you know, a little bit of an aging does to the liquid. But we're definitely on the marketing side seeing way more interest about, I think they're moving from what's the story to what's the, you know, what's in the bottle, who's the gimmick guy behind it, into more of what's the liquid and an advancement of the quality of the liquid. It's exciting times.
I completely agree. I've seen that as well in branding recently. It's gotten away from, hey, this was founded by somebody in 1830, and then we found the recipe in a steamer trunk in an attic. We got away from that kind of branding to, this is just very good stuff. And I, you know, you see that especially in whiskey right now with the products coming out. I think of 2XO, I think of Penelope, these brands where their entire thing is just, we're high quality blends or we're high quality barrel finishes. And those brands have really taken off. And also just, Neil, I want to go back and just say, I completely agree with your point that bourbon has really helped the tequila boom. Many years ago, gosh, probably 7 or 8 years ago, I had the great TJ Douglas. He is the owner of the Urban Grape in Boston. That's the best wine store in Massachusetts and one of the best wine stores in the country. He told me something that was very, very prophetic. He said, all whiskey drinkers are tequila drinkers. They just don't know it yet, but they figured it out. TJ, as usual, was 100% correct on that. So he was really early on that. I just wanted another tequila thing. You know, all of us, I assume, or many of us were down in Orlando for the 86th annual NABCA annual conference last month. And they have, you know, the expo halls, which were packed with brands and brands and brands and brands. And my biggest takeaway, and I said this on the last podcast, so I apologize for repeating myself, but I just wanted to comment here and see if you guys have anything else to say. It's just, I was amazed by the sheer number of tequila brands. I'd never seen that many tequila brands at a NABCA conference. And not only that, I don't know how many tequilas I tasted. You lose track, somewhere around like 20 or 30 tequilas you drink in a row. And then you certainly lose track there, but they all tasted great. I don't think I had a single tequila that tasted off. And, you know, like Sean said, discerning drinkers drink repos. I drank nothing but repos, and it was just quality repo after quality repo. And even, you know, I'm a little hesitant sometimes with these celebrity brands just because, you know, who knows? It's a celebrity. Who knows what the involvement is? There's money. They're just kind of get product out there. I know, maybe that's the thought. And every single celebrity tequila I drank was great. Like The Rock's tequila was great. Whichever Kardashian had a tequila, it was great. LeBron James's tequila, it was great. They all tasted great. There's just so much quality tequila right now.
Yeah, I think, and I'll say just kind of high level, I think people have realized that, and I've had an opportunity to talk to some of these celebrity brand owners or, you know, endorsers, but mainly the brand owners, you know, they realize that the palate sophistication, if you will, of the consumer nowadays, they might buy it once because of your name, but they're not coming back unless what's in the bottle is of good quality. And I think they've come to understand that, you know, this is a, and plus, you know, it's their name on it. They, you know, they want a good quality brand to be associated with them. But I think that's transcends, you know, again, across that entire category. The pool level is so high. I mean, you know, you better bring it, you know, if you're going to compete in that market. It doesn't matter who your name is. So, but I agree, I, you know, and I will say, Kyle, just, you know, because of our mission and what we do, you were sampling product in a very responsible manner.
Of course.
And allowed you to try 20 different because they were, you know,
they of course, were sampled. Of course. And I'm a professional, people, anyone listening, and most people listen to
aren't, aren't we all?
Exactly. Exactly. I have one last question for you, you gentlemen, and speaking of the 86th NABCA annual, and I want you all to be very honest here. While we were down there at the Gaylord Palms Resort, did you go down the water slide?
Well,
I went through. I didn't realize it was a trapdoor one until I got up to the very top and saw it.
Went to the high one. You went to the top one.
The high one.
Yeah, they asked me if I was going down, and I asked them if they had a plunger.
I did not go up to the tippity top. I went down one of the middle ones, but boy, it was tightly coiled. And when you have a stomach full of 30 tequilas or Lord knows how many tequilas, it's, you get to the bottom and you're like, all right, we're not doing that again. Fun.
Well, Kyle, I was in commercial business meetings and I was too busy working to, as I know my team may be listening to this podcast.
Well, I can honestly say, yes, Kyle, we had quite a few tequilas there, but there still weren't enough to get me to go to the top of that slide and trap door down the tube.
My thoughts exactly. Nor were that enough tequilas for me to go all the way up to the top and do whatever in the world. God bless you, David, for going down that one.
Well, it's that Aussie man, you know, he's fearless.
Well, gentlemen, like New Zealand.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on the On and Off podcast today. We really appreciate all three of you taking time out of your schedules for this.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yeah, Kyle, we certainly appreciate doing these. We did one around legal. We put together this one. We look forward to partnering and we enjoy our partnership with your group and the publications and everything, and certainly enjoy doing these and look forward to doing more in the future.
Well, thank you so much, Neil. We look forward to doing more in the future as well. And thank you to all of our listeners. Please stay tuned until our next podcast episode. And until then, cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed the On and Off podcast, please hit the subscribe button. Also, you can find more great content at cheersonline.com and beveragedynamics.com, including recipes, product reviews, and interviews with the movers and shakers of the beverage alcohol industry. You can also sign up for our free weekly e-newsletter for both publications on our websites. Cheers!